Wayne Incorporated hostile takeover. Superman's grounded, waiting for the order. Rex, man, two from the mic, I'm Casanova. Cause now that Chris and Matt are back to bring the pain. This the podcast you play when you're waiting for the train. When you're walking to the store, when you're killing time at work. It's a show that'll destroy the whole universe. So awesome, watch as I spit Jay Ferocious. Two hosts with the most, and I'm Adam Warrock. Whether Marvel or DC, hip-hop or rap, it's like KRS-One's Return of the Boom Bap. Never out of style, and we're coming on strong. Even though every episode's a bit too long. If Flash Gordon dies before I wake, then the cops will probably say it was W-R-A.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, where we are going to the stars. Yeah, the stars. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, is my co-host and my good friend, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight, sir?
Let me tell you something, Chris Sims of the-isb.com and comicsalliance.com.
Oh, man.
We're having a big show, a big show this week.
did you just effortlessly slip from the Macho Man to Ed Sullivan?
I'm sure Macho Man was an Ed Sullivan fan in his day. He would have been a kid at the right time. So
there should be a TV show or a podcast where famous people with really distinctive voices do impressions of other famous people with really distinctive voices.
That actually sounds like a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
I would listen to that radio show. We are basically doing a listener questions edition of War Rocket Ajax this week because, in a sense, this is the last episode of War Rocket Ajax as it is, as you know it.
That's right, we have big changes are coming down the way after Heroes Con this year.
That's right. Yes, very good changes. We will not be doing a show next week because both of us will be traveling and at Heroes Con and exhausted. So we'll be coming back in this, I guess, the second week of June with a new episode that is going to have something different to it. And are we announcing it in this episode, Chris, or are we kind of leaving it a surprise?
I think we're going to leave it a surprise for right now.
Okay.
But it's going to be a good surprise for everybody. It's not a bad thing at all, but it's going to be something kind of cool and something that will allow us to do some cool stuff. So be here for that in 2 weeks when we hit episode 71, or maybe episode volume 2, number 1.
We'll see.
Probably not that. Probably episode 71. We've got a lot of good stuff. No interview today, just me and Matt. So, Matt, what do you say we just go ahead and get right into talking to each other about things?
Okay, let's check ourselves. So come over and tickety-tack yourself before you wreck yourself. Chris, what have you been up to?
In the time between recording the last show and recording this one, probably the biggest thing that has happened in my life, as you probably gathered from the impromptu tribute at the top of the show, was that the Macho Man Randy Savage has died. He has passed away after a heart attack while driving. If you've listened to the show before, if you have read the ISB, if you've read Comics Alliance, if you've talked to me for any length of time, you will know that I am I was a macho maniac. I had the macho maniac or the macho madness bad. He was, I'm a big pro wrestling fan, and he was one of just the all around best guys. When you think about the great guys in that sort of era of WWF, you know, you've got Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior. And those guys, could do really entertaining promos, but they could not wrestle. Like, Hulk Hogan is terrible at wrestling, and always has been. And you know, you think about guys like, you know, Bret Hart. Like, Bret Hart was never, you know, never really that good on the mic. Macho Man, you know, was like Ric Flair was before him, like The Rock would come to be after him. He was one of the few guys that had, you know, an incredible amount of in-ring ability and also, you know, just an amazing charisma to everything he did. And it's,
and just an incredible sense of humor. Like, anybody, like, you don't even have to have been a wrestling fan to go back and watch old clips of Macho Man Randy Savage cutting promos and, like, laugh your fool head off.
Yeah, he like, the best promos are the ones where, like, Mean Gene has to turn around or start biting his knuckles.
Yeah.
Keep from laughing. And he does that all the time when he's doing a promo with the Macho Man.
Well, part of it is just the way, like, the Macho Man voice, which I read an article on Deadspin about, they have a series called Dead Wrestler of the Week that I've actually just become familiar with. And obviously, their Dead Wrestler of the Week this week was Randy Savage. And there was a whole, first of all, there's a YouTube video on that article that was entirely about, that was just nothing but Macho Man promos for like 20 minutes, and it's great. But there's also a little snippet in that article about how basically he essentially talked in the Macho Man voice all the time at certain points in his career. Like even when he was not on, he would talk in with that cadence and in that voice, and everything that someone says in that cadence is funny.
it really is.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you know, almost all of his interviews and promos are on YouTube, like all of the major ones, and they are, like, seriously amazing to watch because they're so ludicrous. And you know, done, like, you want to see that guy do whatever he's about to go do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and again, unlike Warrior, unlike Hogan, you know, when he does it, he's amazing. You know, WrestleMania 3, you know, he stole the show. Like, he and Ricky Steamboat are credited with having the best WrestleMania match ever, in front of 93,000 people at the Pontiac Silverdome, you know, where everybody, you know, everybody paid to see Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, and everybody left that arena talking about Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's cup of coffee in the big time.
That's it, man. Cup of coffee, yeah, cup of coffee. You know, and the like, I think it was last year or the year before. I might have still been working at the store, but WWE finally came out with a big three-disc Macho Man Randy Savage box set that has some of his best matches from, you know, kind of the prime WWE, WWF era, and later from WCW. But, like, the third disc is all interviews and promos. And it's, you know, pick it up. It's on Netflix. If you've got Netflix, you know, drop it in your queue. I'm sure it's going to be in high demand right now. It's worth seeing. Yeah, you know, one of my heroes, Macho Man Randy Savage, and as a tribute, today when I was out at the grocery store, I did buy a Slim Jim. So
that's nice.
I'm popping that open right now, and I'm gonna snap into it. So this one's for you, Macho Man. Mmm, spicy.
There you go. He snapped into it.
I will be snapping into it for the remainder of the show.
Awesome. While you're continuing to snap into that Slim Jim, I have to mention,
so can I just say, the Slim Jim factory is in North Carolina, like the only one in America. Do you remember, I think it was last year or year before, like, it exploded?
Oh, I do remember that. I yeah. do. Yeah.
Did you know that the Macho Man was in town when that happened?
I didn't know that, but somehow I'm not shocked by it.
I think he snapped too hard, man.
It's possible. Anyway, but while you're continuing to snap into it, one last thing I have to say about the Macho Man before we move on to something else. And this actually ties into my check. I had some friends in town over the past couple of days. We're actually recording this episode a little later than normal because I had people coming into town. But my friend Ben Gully and I spent a decent portion of the afternoon on Thursday listening to the iTunes preview clips from Macho Man Randy Savage's rap album that he released in 2004, which is called Be a Man. It's called Be a Man.
It's amazing for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. The title track, Be a Man, is a Hulk Hogan diss track. It is, like, I unabashedly, like, if you don't want to drop the money to actually buy Be a Man, okay, fine. But definitely go onto iTunes and just listen to the preview clips because, man, it is amazing. Like, there's a
What was your favorite line from Be a Man?
Oh, easily, the diss against Hulk Hogan's movie career.
Yes, which that's mine too.
Randy Savage mentions that he was in Spider-Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
The line is like, you know, you're straight to video and I was in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, he was also in Rocky 3. So, you know, you did Walker Texas Ranger, he was in Rocky 3. So,
yeah.
It's kind of even up there, Randy. Yeah. But no, that song is amazing. Again, for all the wrong reasons, but you know, kind of for all the right reasons too.
I mean, I don't think Randy Savage had any illusions about what he was doing. He knew it was ridiculous, and he did it because that's the kind of guy Randy Savage was.
Yeah, and like the thing is, when you hear the words Macho Man Randy Savage rap album in your head, that album is exactly what you think.
That's true.
Like, it is as though those words created it.
Anyway, moving on. My trek this week is I actually played host to my friend Ben and his wife the past few days, and also Chris Haley of Let's Be Friends Again, who came into town here in Chicago to see one of his favorite bands, Sloan, which we saw here Thursday night at Subterranean. It was a really good show. And another Twitter friend of ours, Jason 1749, who has asked questions on the show and so forth, was at the show as well, and we all got to kind of hang out. Unfortunately, like, I've had terrible sore throat and stuffiness and all that stuff, so I was coughing my way through their visits, and so sorry, folks, if you're listening, but that's what I've been up to, and I've been having a fun week, so yeah, that's about it. But anyway, now that we're done with that, let's move on to some wrecks.
Some gems take a long time to eat. I got the giant one, I guess.
It's really going to be the rest of the show, isn't it?
I mean, I'm about three quarters of the way through it, but I've been, you know, steadily snacking since I snapped into it the first time. But these things are I haven't had one in a few years. They're pretty tasty.
Well, all right. Well, we're already recommending then. Let's do some actual wrecks.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris. Beyond Slim Jim products, what do you have to recommend this week?
A lot of good stuff came out this week in terms of, you know, non-comic stuff. The new Art Brut album is out that features album art by Jamie McKelvey. I bought it and... I buy almost all my albums as MP3 albums when I, you know, if there is the option. So I totally bought the new Art Brut album in MP3 and then realized, like, oh man, I wanted that Jamie McKelvey art. So now I don't have that Jamie McKelvey art or all the stuff that comes with it. So I might end up buying that album twice. But But I have yet to actually listen to it. So next week, we'll probably talk about that. Or, well, week after next. But obviously, major thing that came in for me this week was I got a review copy of L.A. Noir, which I had been playing. And I really, really like that game.
I like it, too. You give your reasons for liking it, Chris, and I'll give mine.
Have you ever played the Phoenix Wright games?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's Phoenix Wright, but with better graphics. And it's really, really enjoyable. I think there's a weird sort of schizophrenia to it, in that, you know, the biggest problem with the Phoenix Wright games is that the story's really good, but, you know, since it's a game that's more read than actually played, like, actually advancing the story by doing all the stuff you're supposed to do in the game can get kind of annoying.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to go through all these options. I just want to know what these characters are doing, because this game is written so well and is so fun. And that's kind of the way it is with L.A. Noir, but they've headed that off by providing a lot of action stuff in it. But that's equally weird. Because, you know, I play for 2 hours where I'm going to crime scenes. And how far have you played in, Matt?
I just got my copy of L.A. Noir today. And so I've been playing it most of the afternoon. But, like, I am sort of kind of just starting.
Okay. Well, no specific spoilers. There's, you know, one level where it's like, you know, I sat on the couch playing this game for 2 hours. I'm going to crime scenes, looking for clues, interrogating people. And then, you know, suddenly it turns into Grand Theft Auto 4. Like, all of a sudden, you know, it gets to this thing where I'm running around and, you know, taking cover and fighting, like, you know, 20 bad guys who all have guns.
Yeah.
And it's, like, really weird. Because, you know, it turns into Grand Theft Auto every now and then. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a little jarring, I guess would be the word. I don't think it's not enjoyable. It's just that, you know, it takes you a minute to get back in that mood, you know?
Yeah.
Back in that mindset from the sort of reading people's faces to see if they're lying. Which, by the way, they have added an element to it that's really that makes it really difficult as compared to the Phoenix Wright games.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, in you know, Phoenix Wright, people were either, you know, you could press people to get them to reveal more information, and you could you could point out their contradictions by presenting evidence.
Right.
And you had like a life bar so that you could make a couple mistakes. L.A. Noir is not forgiving at all. First of all, you can either doubt someone or outright accuse them of lying. You can only do one or the other, and you only get one chance at everything.
Right, and if you have evidence that they're lying and you just go with doubt, you fucked up.
Yeah, you totally screw up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, again, that's the kind of thing that really sends me straight to Game Facts. Because, you know, I like playing the game. I want to think I can, you know, I can do it on my own. But it's also one of those games where I don't want to mess up. And I don't want to miss something in the game. Like, there's one case, and I don't really want to talk about it until you've played through it. And I know it's a new game, so I don't want to spoil it for anybody who's listening. But there's one part of the game where you're given sort of an option on which suspect to pursue. Like, I picked the one that I was reasonably sure committed the crime. There was a lot of evidence pointing to this guy. But then, you know, it gave me, like, a message after I'd finished. Like, I finished the case. You know, it advanced me to the next one, no problem. But there was this, this, you know, little note on your end-of-case report that really made me think I messed up. And it's really frustrating to try and, you know, make sure you're picking the right thing and getting everybody's story straight. And you have to keep a lot of stuff straight in your head. It does provide you with the notes that you can look at any time. But you have to, you know, kind of piece everything together. But at the same time, like, the frustrations of that game are why actual police work would be frustrating.
Yes. So,
You know, yes. I can't really fault them for that. But it's, you know, visually incredible.
Yeah, I go back and forth on whether I really love the facial animations in it or am a little creeped out by it.
See, I think there's like a couple of them early on in the game that do kind of walk right into the uncanny valley.
Yeah.
But overall, I think, you know, once you're through those first cases, I think things sort of iron themselves out.
Well, I don't know what it is, but when the player character is in a uniform, I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying he starts out in a uniform and pretty quickly moves on to being like a plain clothes cop.
Spoiler
in a suit.
Warning, the box art happens.
Yeah. So when he's in a uniform, he looks really weird. Like really like not right.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff in that tutorial chapter. Like,
yeah.
When you're driving around to a destination, you can hit the X button and get directions from your partner, which is kind of a cool, you know, a cool thing. But in that opening chapter, you know, I was trying it out because I was going to have to review it either on this podcast or elsewhere. And you know, every time I would hit it, he'd be like, "Take the next left." And I was like,
oh, yeah.
"Ooh, they did not put a lot into that." But then, you know, later on in the game, you know, once you get to, you become a detective and you're working the actual cases that aren't the tutorial, you know, you hit the button and the guy's like, "Yeah, it's left up here," or "Go straight on through this one." And it's much more natural, and it seems like they put a little bit more effort into that, which is weird that they wouldn't have done that for the very first thing you see.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess it's Rockstar. They assume that you're going to be playing that game for a while.
Yeah, I, you know, you could maybe assume that the tutorial part was sort of a rushed last thing that they did.
Yeah.
Like somebody insisted, no, there's got to be something that shows players how to do this and this and this. Because, like I said, once your character is in suits, he looks perfectly fine.
Yeah.
In, like, there's this one part at the very beginning where he's, like, walking out of his house, and he's got this big grin on his face, and he's wearing, like, his police uniform, where he seriously looks like somebody from the Black Hole Sun video.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. That creeped me right out. But it definitely gets better. The one other thing in the game that, like, I'm not entirely sure about just yet, but I'm sure will turn into something, like, very cool, is, like, as you're playing through the various cases that you're playing through, there are these little snippets of, I guess, like, game meta plot. Like flashbacks.
The Southern Doctor?
There's the Southern Doctor, which is like a game meta plot thing, but then, which is tied in to the flashbacks.
Yes.
And, like, they don't really connect it to anything yet, except for maybe being like some background about your character. And they feel a little shoehorned in right at the beginning. But I'm sure as it becomes more of a factor in the game, it'll become clearer and clearer why they're in there. But right now it feels a little bit like, you know, just something that kind of like is an interruption between parts of a case, or, you know, start ending one case and starting another.
Yeah. One thing that I kind of, it's not even something that I don't like, but something that I think is kind of weird, is Phelps himself, when he's interrogating people. That dude has no time for people who do not tell him their entire life story up front. Like, that dude gets mean.
He does get mean.
Like, there's, you know, the case that I was doing last night, you're at a boarding house, and the boarding house woman is like, you know, yes, well, you know, she left at around 10, I think. I don't know if she came back. And you, it's, you know, something like that, and you hit doubt, and he goes, "A nosy old hag like you doesn't keep tabs on people? Come on, get up!" be up front with us. And I'm like, whoa, that dude just flipped a switch.
Yeah. It's well, that's... I chalk that up to him just being, like, a noir character.
Yeah, he's, you know... But he kind of goes back and forth between being, you know, Philip Marlowe and Parker, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
like, 75% of the time he's Marlowe.
He's sort of like half Parker. He's sort of like half a noir character and half Joe Friday.
That opening, like, I seriously thought that opening dialogue was from Jack Webb.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second, isn't Jack Webb dead? did Rockstar pay Jack Webb to do this before he died? Like 10 years ago?
The one other thing, and this isn't necessarily a complaint, it's just an observation. Rockstar, like, tends to pride itself on humor in its games. This game has almost none.
It really doesn't. Like, there's, you know... There's some very, like, you know, gallows humor stuff from, like, you know, the coroner and yeah. the other detectives. But, yeah, there's, like, there's, it, you know, it's not nearly as funny as the Grand Theft Auto games.
Or even Red Dead Redemption.
Or even that, which I think, you know, is kind of, you know, fitting the genre.
Yeah.
And I mean, I gotta say, like, we've said a lot of complaints. I think it's a phenomenal game, and I'm loving it.
Oh, it's terrific. And I was gonna say, it reminds me of... a game that I played that I'm relatively sure no one else has played. But it was a PC game that came out around like 2000, 2001, and it was a Blade Runner game. But you weren't Deckard. You were a different Blade Runner. And it had a lot of the same, like, action kind of sequences, even like chasing suspects around kind of stuff, and sort of the same sort of interrogation and collecting clues sort of mechanics. And I loved the hell out of that Blade Runner game because, like, a lot like this game, like, you could conceivably go after the wrong person and arrest them, and still, like, the game would continue, even if you, like, accused someone who wasn't a replicant of being a replicant or something like that. And I loved that. And, you were able to get, like, so many different endings because of, like, different stuff you did. I don't know about this game and endings, but I think it's pretty cool how... Like, you could arrest the wrong person, and it's not necessarily game over.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, you know, there's some... And there's a lot of, there is a lot of, sort of, depending on what you do and in what order you do it. Like, there are places where you can go back and revisit old witnesses with more information. Yeah. And there's one where, you know, a person of interest calls in, like, a burglar at her apartment... And if you get there fast enough, you can actually, you know, fight them as they're there. If you don't, you just kind of have to go through the aftermath for clues. But yeah, like, it's, you know, it's really smart. But yeah, the inevitable comparison to Phoenix Wright and the fact that it's coming from, you know, the guys who did Grand Theft Auto and Bully, it means that you are probably expecting more humor than what's there. And that's, you know, that's the general you, including me. Not you, Matt Wilson. Well, Matt, let me tell you what you expected. No, but I totally agree with you. But yeah, overall, I'm really enjoying it. And just the design sense of the game is really good. Like, I'm a sucker for, like, deco and, you know, post-war art and design. So, you know, seeing those big, you know, old movie style title cards for each case. Like, even that is just gorgeous and beautifully done.
It's great.
L.A. Noire is highly, highly enjoyable. And it's fun. It's also fun to just kind of cruise around Los Angeles in 1947.
Yeah.
Listening to Jack Benny on the radio.
And, you know, come upon the RKO Theater, just sitting there.
Yeah.
So I think that's a mutual recommendation on our part.
Yeah, highly, highly enjoyable. Did you have anything else for this week, Matt?
I'm just going to mention this in passing because we could talk about it for a long time, but I've been running through Twin Peaks on Netflix Watch Instantly, and if you've never watched Twin Peaks, here's all I'll say.
Is Fire Walk With Me on Instant too?
I don't think so. Just the series. But here's what I'll say about Twin Peaks. The portion, when it was actually airing on TV, people stopped watching a few episodes into the second season because they thought it became too crazy and too, focused on things that weren't Laurel Palmer's murder. That's when the show gets great.
I think I actually have never finished it. I think I was about halfway through season two.
It's a little, before the halfway point of season two, but, the show just gets beautifully crazy in the second season. The first season seems like there's some, network control going on, or it's pretty focused on the murder investigation. The second season goes nuts, and if you're a David Lynch fan like I am, oh, man, it is wonderful. But that's all I'll say. Chris, we should probably move on and talk about some comics.
Let's do it.
So as I mentioned in the checks portion of the show, I have been pretty busy the past couple of days, ever since Wednesday when the comics came out. So I have not really had a chance to read anything this week. But Chris, what would you like to talk about?
I've only read a couple of things from this week, but the things that I have read were awesome. Obviously, we talk about Amazing Spider-Man all the time. This issue was the second part of the sort of two-issue Christos Gage fill-in. Or not even a fill-in, but, a Christos Gage story where it crosses over with Avengers Academy, and they fight the Psycho Man and his magic iPad. And I love Christos Gage. I think he does a phenomenal job with Spider-Man in this issue. To the point where, reading the last one, I didn't even know that it wasn't Dan Slott, and I'm a guy who really likes Dan Slott's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Until I went back and looked at the credits. It's Spider-Man guest teaching Avengers Academy kids how to be a hero. And they fight the Psycho Man, who makes them hate each other and doubt themselves, which is really good. There's also some backup stories that I did not read yet. I will read it eventually. The other thing I read, though, was Detective Comics number 877, the latest Scott Snyder, following the adventures of Dick Grayson Batman.
Yeah.
And he introduces a new goofy-as-hell supervillain named the Roadrunner.
Actually, I have looked through the issue and saw some of that stuff, and I gotta say, I do like Scott Snyder, but some of the dialogue in that issue, I'm sure it's meant to intentionally be funny, but man, it is.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's like when these guys come on the Batman books, they're Keith Giffen, a couple years ago, I believe, suggested that anybody who wants to work for the big two should be mandated. They should mandatorily have to create three new characters. And it feels like the Batman books operate that way. When Ed Brubaker came on, he created Zeiss, who, was kind of a weird villain, but then was used really well later on in Catwoman and in Greg Rucka's Huntress and the Question backup stories. When Larry Hama was on Batman in, sorry, Larry, that terrible run where he created the Banner and Orca the Whale Woman.
Whale Woman, yes.
It feels like, it feels like somebody walked up to Scott Snyder and was like, hey, you've been writing Batman, you've been writing Detective Comics for a year now. When are you going to create some terrible villains? But yeah, like I kind of like the idea behind the Roadrunner, but the thing that I especially like about him is that he takes all of like 3 pages to deal with in his entirety.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there is no end of issue cliffhanger about the Roadrunner, and halfway through the issue, attention sort of returns to the Boss Zuko's daughter story, and things get like really super good. And you know, there's a really cool end of issue cliffhanger, and I like everything that that Snyder's doing. It feels like he's, you know, he's using old continuity stuff, but in the right way.
Yeah,
like he's building on it, and you know, if you know that Boss Zuko is the guy that killed Dick Grayson's parents, like this issue has a whole lot of meaning. If you don't, then they say enough that, you know, oh, like she's a mobster's daughter. He's, you know, more or less Batman's son talking to Jim Gordon, whose son just came back to town. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of parent-child relationships going on in here, even if you don't know any of the history of these characters. If you've never read Batman Year One, if you've never read, I guess Batman Year Three would be where Boss Zuko comes from. Ugh. But you know, if you don't know the histories behind these characters, there's enough there where it's really apparent what he's doing. But if you do, there's a lot more in there. And there's actually, you know, dialogue with the Roadrunner that wasn't the part that was in previews.
Yeah.
Is actually really cool. Like, you know, there's some conversation about Superman in there, and how, you know, and the difference between committing a crime in Metropolis and committing a crime in Gotham City. You know, Scott Snyder is obviously a dude who has thought about this stuff a lot. And I like that. I like guys who, you know, think about how things will work in these universes and sort of make them make sense. I don't think I'm blowing anybody's mind when I say that I really like Scott Snyder on Detective and now Gates of Gotham, which we talked about last week.
Yep.
But those are the only two new comics that I've read. FF number 4 came out. Have not read it yet. Looking forward to it. A lot of other good stuff, too.
I saw some interesting Twitter chatter about Secret Avengers number 13. And I do know that it involves the Abraham Lincoln statue at the Lincoln Memorial fighting Nazi robots.
Yeah, I have heard... I've not read it yet. I've heard mixed reviews.
Yeah.
The people who like it, and I know some people who like it, seem to really like it. The people who don't like it, and there's some very good friends of mine who do not like it, hated it.
Yeah. I saw some particular hate for it on Twitter, so.
Yeah, I'm definitely willing to give, you know, Nick Spencer a shot on this stuff. I think Secret Avengers is going to be a weird book for him. And it sounds like he's making it a weird book.
Yeah.
Which, you know, which is fun. But I have not personally read it, so hearsay. Throw
hearsay.
That out of court.
Purely hearsay. All right. Well, since we're just talking speculation now, let's get into our areas of expertise and answer some listener questions in our listener question / interview segment.
That we're doing this episode with just me and Matt is we kind of wanted to do a sort of, you know, I guess Heroes Con preview episode, for lack of a better term, although this is not what that is. But if you happen to be heading to Charlotte this coming weekend for the Southeast's greatest comic book convention and probably my favorite con in the country, Heroes Con, June 3rd, 4th, and 5th, I will be there all 3 days, and also Thursday night. I will actually be on a panel every day. On Friday at 1 o'clock, I will be moderating the Comic Twart panel, which I did last year, and it was a lot of fun. Dan Panosian, Francesco Francavilla, Ron Salas, Tom Fowler, friend of the show, Declan Shalvey, and Dave Johnson.
Oh, wow.
Actually, pretty excited about that. He was not there last year. I don't think he was a part of Comic Twart when we did the panel last year. those guys are all like really, really funny. You know, just beyond seeing them draw stuff. And, you know, it, basically what happens is people can come to the panel, you suggest a character, and all of those guys will sit at a table, you know, talking to each other and taking interview questions as I basically, you know, there's not a lot of moderation to do for that one. I just kind of stand around, you know, admiring their work. And then all their sketches are donated to the annual art auction. Last year they did Luke Cage. And one thing you might not know about Francisco Francavilla, he is fast.
Yeah.
In the hour of the panel, he did two complete Luke Cage sketches that were both incredible. Saturday at 2:30, there is going to be a Comics Alliance Ask Chris Live panel. That is going to be me, Kurt Franklin, and Chris Haley. We will be representing Comics Alliance there. Obviously, if you are a fan of this show, then you know what to expect when I get together with those two guys. It is going to be a lot of fun. And we will be, you know, basically just taking audience questions and talking about what it's like to work at Comics Alliance, or answering any comics or comics culture questions, or any questions at all that you may have. If you can't make it to the show, we will be recording that one. I will have a video camera there, and we will probably be putting it up on Comics Alliance later. But if you're there, please come by. Help us get a good crowd. And then on Sunday, I'm not actually sure what time it is, but I think there's going to be a webcomics panel that at least one of us, me or Chad or Matt Diggs, will be a part of in our capacity as the creators of Awesome Hospital. So, yeah. And, you know, obviously, we will also have a table, Action Age Comics. And Matt, you'll be there on Saturday.
I will. Just kind of hanging out, which is what I usually do at Heroes Con. So, you know,
harassing
if you're there.
Harassing cosplayers.
Yeah, harassing cosplayers. Asking them where they got their outfits.
Asking them who they're dressed up as.
Yes, this year I talked it over with my friend Ben, and we decided that I should every cosplayer, I should just ask them, I should just go up to them and say, you call that a Moon Knight costume? So that may happen.
I think my favorite one was actually the year I met you for the first time, where your strategy was to walk up to people dressed up as like Supergirl and be like, and you are?
Yeah, the question was, and who are you supposed to be? The year before that, I just kept harassing these two cosplayers who were dressed as Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn and said, hey, you look like those girls from that show. And they got really sick of me.
It's good-natured harassment, though.
Yeah.
It's the kind of harassment the whole family can enjoy.
It really is. Yeah, if you're going to be anywhere near Charlotte this weekend, you should definitely come to Heroes Con and have a good time, because it's a lot of fun.
It's a great show. And, I should mention, Matt, Chad, and I are going to have a special convention-only mini-comic based on Awesome Hospital. I kind of don't want to ruin the surprise, but it's going to be something near and dear to our hearts. For this summer's convention season, we will not be posting it on the website. We will only be selling it at the convention. So please come out and get one. We will sign whatever you want. And we've got a book signing as well.
Yes, which I'm probably not going to make it to. But
Friday night, 7:00. I don't know where, but check out thebureauchiefs.com and all the information on the signing will be there.
Yeah, I wish I.
Good. I guess I should specify.
Yeah, for Write More Good. I wish I could be there, but I've got other commitments with family, so I'm probably not going to make it to that, unfortunately. Anyway, since we have plugged and plugged our appearances at Heroes Con, let's answer some listener questions, Chris. This one is from Evan Guidry, who is a Hundo Club member. He's been on the show before. He asks, there's a Marvel 2-in-1 style book with musicians instead of superheroes and Huge instead of the Thing. and it's the big 100th issue. Who does Huge team up with, and what villain do they oppose?
That's easy. It's KRS-One.
Okay.
Is who he teams up with, and I think they're also fighting KRS-One.
So it's like evil KRS-One?
Yeah, it's like KRS-One is split into KRS-One and KRS-One-Two.
I like it.
And then he and Huge have to battle him for control of the rap gospel.
Oh, that's good. I like that a lot. I will totally be with you on that answer.
Yeah, like seriously, I am ready to write this because, you know, first issue would be he and David Bowie team up to fight the Thin White Duke. He teams up with Ziggy Stardust to fight the Thin White Duke. That's all I got, but that would be a really good issue.
That would be a good issue. Yeah. I think at some point he's got to team up with, like, somebody who's really, like, not that great, but really popular, just to, like, boost sales up. and they'll fight, like,
okay, so Lady somebody... Gaga.
Well, maybe Lady Gaga, maybe like Katy Perry, and they team up to fight like a music tycoon who's hoarding platinum albums.
Oh my god, that sounds awesome!
Yeah, but that's just the cash-in issue.
Yeah, but you know what? We could, you and me could make that work. We could make art out of that. We could polish that to her.
We probably could. Next question is from Daniel LaLoja. And this question is for me, and it's going to have a pretty easy answer. He asks, I was wondering if Matt could talk about his favorite barbecue places in Chicago. He says, personally, he loves Smoke Daddy's, but he would love to hear my opinion. I've been to Smoke Daddy's, and Smoke Daddy's is the least offensive barbecue restaurant I've been to in Chicago. There aren't any I would call my favorite. My worst experience at a barbecue restaurant in Chicago was at a restaurant called Q, where I walked in. It was about 7 o'clock. My girlfriend and I walked up to the counter to say, you know, there's two of us, and there's like a maitre d', and he says, "Are we expecting you tonight?" And I reply, "No, you're not."
And dude, was, I'm here, aren't I?
And he says, well, we aren't seating anyone until 9:30. And I said, okay, bye. Because no barbecue restaurant should require a reservation.
Yeah, the very idea of that I find offensive.
Like, in my mind, the epitome of a barbecue restaurant has sweet tea, a pitcher of it, on the table at all times.
Man, now I want to go to that one that I always talk about that's at the gas station down a block from my house. I want there to be a maitre d' there.
Yeah. It's like
and,
this place
and
wasn't
the
even,
will be having.
This place wasn't even like prohibitively expensive. Like you know, for a plate of barbecue was $50. Okay, I get why you have to have a reservation and go there. But this was like, you know, pretty, maybe like a slightly more expensive barbecue restaurant, but not so expensive that, like, I feel like I need to wear a tuxedo there. But this is the problem I've run into at, like, a lot of barbecue restaurants in this city, which is, like, things are just, like, sort of, like, scratch-your-head kind of pricey. Like you look at the menu as the items on the menu, and it's like, okay, barbecue sandwich is, like, $7. But then you realize, you find out it doesn't come with anything. Like, everything's a la carte. And you're dropping $35 for barbecue, which is just unheard of to me. So, Daniel, to answer your question, I haven't found anything great yet. But
so I guess I know what we're going to be eating on Saturday night.
Yeah, yeah.
As though there was any doubt.
Although I'm probably going to just jump in and do that Thursday night in Shelby. So But that doesn't mean I can't eat barbecue again. So,
stock up, man.
Yeah.
I love barbecue so much that I had it in New York City.
Okay. This question is from my friend Ben Gully, who I've mentioned previously on the show. And we've actually done this on the show. But he asks, who is better? Who is the better one at making the transforming sound effect from the old Transformers cartoon? Between the two of us.
I remember doing it. Yeah. I don't remember what yours sounded like.
Mine was very half-assed. It was wint, 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 wint.
Yeah, I don't think either one of us quite gets it right, because mine's like the...
Yeah.
Which in my head is closer, but I never liked the Transformers, so...
Well, we'll leave it up to the listeners. Which you tell us which of us does the better half-assed Transformer noise.
Now, if like that was the Transformers in the world of Donald Duck, I think you would have it.
Yeah, that's probably true. If it was the Duckburg version of Transformers.
If the Penguin had a Transformer, it would undoubtedly go wah, 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 wah.
It probably would. That's true. The next question is from Brian Sotek, a.k.a. Hey, This Is Brian on Twitter. He asks, which is better, a Reese's Heart, Reese's Egg, Reese's Pumpkin, or Reese's Christmas Tree?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. It's the pumpkin.
I'm going to say it probably is the pumpkin just because of all of those, of, like, all holiday candy, my favorite is always Halloween. And in fact, Halloween might be my favorite holiday.
I mean, you know me. I'm a Christmas guy.
Yeah.
I look forward to Christmas all year. Looking forward to it as we speak in May. But no, the very, like, for one thing, it comes in an orange package already. You're halfway there. Reese's pumpkin. Easily.
Yeah. I mean, I love Halloween.
Reese's egg always seems like a little too much.
Yeah, I think it's got too much filling. It's sort of like the Cadbury egg, which is just like there's way too much going on in a Cadbury egg.
What is going on here?
Yeah, it's so much.
Yeah, I like Cadbury. Like, I like the chocolate. I like the filling. But it's, you know, like, if you can get through a Cadbury egg in one sitting. Like, eat it all at once and not regret it, like, immediately, then you are a better or quite possibly worse man than I.
Yeah. Peanut butter eggs, far on a way better than Cadbury eggs, but I still think the pumpkin is better.
Yeah.
Next question, and this may be our last email question before we move on to Twitter questions. This is from Neil Jacoby. And he asks, he has set up a tag team match scenario for us between NWA, the Wu-Tang Clan, the Dungeon Family, and Odd Future. He asks...
I don't know the Dungeon Family.
Dungeon Family is Outcast.
Are they like the Bobby Heenan family?
Dungeon Family is Outcast and their extended family.
Oh, okay.
So it's Outcast and, like, Goody Mob and, like, Slim Cutta Calhoun and
Purple
all
Royal
of those
Stars.
Guys. Yeah, they put out one album in 2001 called Even in Darkness. That's great. If you can dig up Even in Darkness from 2001, it had the song Trans DF Express on it. It's amazing. Eugene and I have talked on the reg about that album and how good it is. And I love Outkast, and I would put that Dungeon Family album up with, like, anything of theirs. Yeah. Totally pick up that Dungeon Family album if you can. But anyway, the four groups are NWA, Wu-Tang, Dungeon Family, and Odd Future. He asks, which group wins and who's the last rapper standing? And he wants us to assume that Earl from Odd Future has been freed. And he has an addendum to that. He says, this would be a four-way tag team match with one member of each group in the ring at one time. And he just wanted to make that clear. So, rap tag team match, who wins?
Here's the thing, okay? My gut says Wu-Tang. Because I feel like, you know, they've got that Wu-Tang style. They got that Wu-Tang sword.
Well, they have the Shaolin style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think all of NWA, except for Ice Cube, gets eliminated first.
Well, NWA just, like, I think they lose just numbers-wise.
Yeah, what's Arabian Prince gonna do?
Yeah.
What's Yellow Boy gonna do in that situation? He's gonna get knocked out by Big Boy. That's what he's gonna do. Ice Cube carried that group. Like, that's why No Vaseline is such a great track, because they could not come back from it. Because, you know, the guy who made all their weapons left and started a war.
But, like, in my mind, you know, I know there was kind of like a revolving door of members in NWA, you know, but in my mind, NWA is NWA as they were in 1988. There were five of them.
Yeah.
There are, like, 9 members of the Wu-Tang Clan. There are probably a dozen members of the Dudgeon family, and like 10 or 11 members of Odd Future. NWA just loses on sheer numbers.
Yeah.
In this scenario.
We're just talking about, like, NWA is straight out of Compton, NWA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's Cube, Dre, Easy, Yellow Boy, Arabian Prince.
Yeah, no MC Ren in this scenario.
Yeah, well, MC Ren's worthless anyway. maybe DOC, like, on the outside, like Jim Cornette.
Okay.
Maybe. But yeah, like, they, like, there's no way. Here's what would happen is Ice Cube would be in the ring, and he would do some stuff. Then Eazy-E would get in the ring and do the same stuff. And then MC Ren would get in the ring and do the same stuff, but way worse.
For Wu-Tang Clan, I will allow Capadonna to be included.
Okay, so it's the original 9 plus Capadonna.
Yeah.
What about Redman?
Redman, no.
No Redman, okay.
Because Redman's just associated with Meth Man. I wouldn't associate him with the rest of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah, I just think, you know, like, Odd Future, I mean, they don't have the... It's like like Tupac said, man. It's like, you know, you ain't strong enough, and you ain't rapped long enough.
Yeah, they're brand new. They have the youth and energy.
Yeah, but I don't think youth and energy beats the RZA.
Yeah,
I think Inspector Deck, you know, he's the inspector.
Well, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing about Odd Future, and I like Odd Future a lot. They're all bark and no bite.
Odd Future.
What?
I was a little underwhelmed.
Well, I like Odd Future, but they're all bark and no bite. Tyler will do something very funny and maybe say something really shocking, but I think when it comes right down to it, in the ring, he'll just give up and leave.
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't want to deal with it, because he's 20 and he doesn't care enough.
He's got to go write himself a new alias.
Yeah, and
like, even the guys in Wu-Tang are like, hey, could you settle on like 4 or 5 names?
I do really love the name Thurnus Haley, though, which is his old man golfer character. Oh, man, I love Thurnus Haley. Go watch the Thurnus Haley YouTube videos, because they're really funny. But anyway, I think it comes down between Dungeon Family and Wu-Tang. I think the last two...
Are we counting all 10 Andre 3000s from the Hey Ya video? Is Dookie there? But the Love Haters?
No, I think we just have one Andre 3000.
Okay. So fast, he's like 10 guys.
It's true. It's true. I think... I do think that in the end, we're probably going to end up with, I'm going to say, from Wu-Tang, I don't know. I think the last standing Wu-Tang member is either going to be GZA or Ghostface.
I was about to say Ghostface.
Yeah.
And
I'm pretty sure Dre is going to be the last standing member.
When is the next Def Jam Vendetta coming out? We can settle this.
And I'm pretty sure Dre is going to be the last standing member of Dungeon Family. And man, that is a tough matchup.
That's rough.
I feel like I have to give it to Andre 3000.
Yeah, but, I think Andre 3000 is like would be like the luchador of this one.
Well, I feel like he would be like the sorcerer character in a fighting game that is super cheap. Like
the Pikachu.
Yeah, like it's like he does like he's way off balance from the other characters because he can fuck you up like from across the ring. You can't even get close to him. So I'm going to say Andre 3000. Dungeon Family wins. Andre 3000 is the last fighter standing.
I'm going to go with I am going to go with Wu Tang and Ghostface. But I will say I think Ice Cube gets the moral victory. It's like if in the Royal Rumble, like he's the guy who goes in at number one and is still there at number 30. I think when they're when they're carrying him away from the ring, Raider's cap in tatters.
Yeah.
I think he gets the standing ovation from the crowd before Andre 3000 and Ghostface get it on.
And as Ice Cube's being carted out, and somebody will Dre or somebody will come up to him and say, "Cube, we are done yet." Okay, let's move on to some Twitter questions.
That's a good one to move on with. if this is your first show you've ever listened to, you have heard everything that we talk about on this show.
Yeah, it's true.
Batman, barbecue, wrestling, hip hop. All right, our first Twitter question comes from a frequent questioner, MK2Face with a 3, which is how I always pronounce that name. I don't know if that's right, but whatever. He would like to know, what are our thoughts on Sailor Moon? And he says he doesn't really have a specific question, he just wants to hear us talk about it.
Well, Chris, what are your thoughts on Sailor Moon?
I fucking love Sailor Moon.
I thought that might be the... Your answer.
Yeah. Is anyone surprised that the guy who owns all 5 Bring It On movies on DVD and has My Little Pony figures on his desk as we record this was really into Sailor Moon when he was about 14? No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody's surprised by that at all.
My answer is I don't give a shit about Sailor Moon. I don't really know anything about Sailor Moon, but I do know the theme music. And the reason I do know the theme music is because in my youth, I used to watch a lot of Dragon Ball, and it was paired with Sailor Moon, and so I would catch the opening credits of Sailor Moon a lot and hear the theme music.
You know what? I think I came out ahead on that one.
You probably did. That was a lot of wasted time on Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, the thing I like about Sailor Moon is that it makes no sense. That everybody... Like, for the first season, everybody's, like, kind of running around going, like, who's the moon princess? Which one of us is the reincarnation of the moon princess? Is it you, Sailor Mars? I don't know. Is it you, Sailor Moon? Maybe so. Maybe think that one through, guys. Also, like, as a joke gift, one year for Christmas, as a gag gift, my sister got me, like, a Sailor Moon, like, young reader's novel. That was clearly written by someone who had been hired because of her Sailor Moon fan fiction.
Nice.
Clearly. Because first of all, like, she was, like, I mean, like, she had her author bio in the back, and she was, like, 17 or something. So, but it was, it was a very strange experience reading, like, an extremely fanficky professional thing. And I hope that she went on to bigger and better things. Maybe she's doing that new Sailor Moon manga adaptation that's coming out. Next question comes from a newly minted power listener, Magic Love Hose, who would like to know, which is the worst sequel, Highlander 2 or Blues Brothers 2000?
Easily the answer to that is Blues Brothers 2000.
I have not seen Highlander 2.
Highlander 2 is bad. It's very bad.
But like, sight unseen, I'm willing to say it's
the special director's cut of Highlander 2 that's supposed to make it sense is still terrible. Like, here's all you need to know about Highlander 2. In the first Highlander, Sean Connery dies. He's dead. He's back in Highlander 2.
Is it explained at all?
No. And he's like Christopher Lambert, like the Highlander, is a completely, like, basically a completely different character.
Are you talking about Raiden?
Yes, Raiden. MacLeod is basically a completely different character. Like, it is a mess of a movie. But Blues Brothers 2000 is a fucking horrible travesty embarrassment of a movie that should have never been made. And
I hope the people listening at home can hear you pounding on your desk.
Like, the original film of Blues Brothers 2000 should be, like, confiscated and buried in cement in, like, the mantle of the earth. Because it is, oh, it is fucking horrid. Like,
so you don't like it?
I don't like
it. But you think Blues Brothers 2000 is worse?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, like, the thing about Blues Brothers 2000, I saw that movie in the theater because I really, like all right-thinking individuals, I love Blues Brothers, the movie. But, like, Blues Brothers 2000 kind of forgot why people liked Blues Brothers.
Yes.
It's like, it's, you know, they like it because it's funny. they do not like it because there is a pirate queen played by Erica Batu.
Right, it's
which, like the music store owner played by Ray Charles is one thing. The pirate queen played by Erica Batu is operating on kind of a different level.
Well, it's like the original Blues Brothers has cameos by musicians, like Aretha Franklin as the waitress,
James Brown,
Cab Calloway,
It's like, it's obvious that in Blues Brothers, you know, they like that music.
Yeah.
But they're also making a comedy movie.
Right. And they're not like it doesn't wink at the audience necessarily. Yeah, it's like you know it's Aretha Franklin and she's singing Respect. But it's like it's believable that a waitress in that situation in Chicago could be singing that song to somebody.
Yeah.
In Blues Brothers 2000, it's not just a wink. It's like shutting an eyelid on an entire fucking face. The entire movie.
Yeah. It's like things do not follow logically in that movie. Like there's no plot, and also Jim Belushi is in it. So like, you know, automatic F.
Yeah.
It's like if you had a teacher that would fail you no matter what happened in your paper because you wrote a lot as one word or something. I had teachers like that. Like, yeah, if you put Jim Belushi in your movie, automatic F. Well, sorry, the substitute.
Here's all you need to know about the difference between Blues Brothers and Blues Brothers 2000. The Dan Aykroyd that was in the Blues Brothers was one of the coolest guys on the planet. He'd just, you know, been on Saturday Night Live. In that cast of, like, extraordinarily cool people. He was so funny. He did so much funny shit on Saturday Night Live. He was, like, awesome. The Dan Aykroyd that was in Blues Brothers 2000 was also doing commercials about vodka in crystal skull glasses, which he still sells.
I'm sorry, there's nothing about that you just said that did not sound cool. That sounds like something Jay-Z would do. You crazy for this one?
You are. You're crazy for this one, Dan.
if he's still doing those commercials, he needs to do that now. He needs to be like, you're crazy for this one, Dan.
All right. Next question.
Next question comes from Bear Surprise, who would like to know, what would the Flashpoint versions of yourselves be like? Matt, what's Flashpoint Matt Wilson like?
He's got a mustache.
Okay.
That's it.
Cool.
So I look more like my dad.
Oh, well, they're going to love that.
Yeah.
Obviously, they want you to look like the version of you that was around in the 70s. I think the Flashpoint version of Chris Sims would be boring and have dialogue that wasn't very good. So, next question comes from last week's Hundo Club member Luke Hare, Coltreg, on Twitter. If Galactus wanted to eat Earth, there was no Silver Surfer or Watcher, and you had access to all real-life resources, how would you stop him?
How would I stop him?
Yeah. Or it's up to you, Matt.
The two of us, how would we stop him?
I have a plan.
Okay, what's your plan?
I would take Galactus, like I would get like a helicopter, and I would take Galactus to that giant, like, continent-sized floating trash in the Pacific Ocean. You know, all that big mass of plastic and garbage. And just be like, come on, do you really want to eat that? Come on. Look at that. Do you want to eat that? Come on.
I just came up with a similar plan. All right, here's what you do. You build a huge Galactus-sized movie screen in front of Earth. All right? And when Galactus is approaching, you show Blues Brothers 2000 on it. And it becomes so unappetizing to him that he turns around and leaves.
Matt, he would be like, you're right. This planet is obviously poisoning the galaxy. You've doomed us all, Matt. You've doomed us all. Next question. Power listener Max to the Max would like to know, what's your favorite natural disaster movie? Blues Brothers 2000,
I think. That movie, yeah. I don't know if that disaster was natural.
I think we've got an episode title. Do you have a favorite? I don't think I've got a favorite natural disaster movie.
Usually my favorite
is Megapython versus Gatoroid. Is that a
disaster? Now see, I was gonna go straight to like giant irradiated animals.
Them?
But that's, yeah, it was probably gonna be them. But that's not a natural disaster either. I don't think there's a natural disaster movie I do really like.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think I own any.
Because all I can think of is, like, Twister, and all those volcano movies, and,
Armageddon.
The Day After Tomorrow, and I don't like any of those.
Yeah, so bad question, Max. Good going. Shatter that kid's self-esteem so bad. Next question comes from Katie Bryan, who says, what are some of the most underrated and unread stories of graphic novels, comics, or manga in the past 10 years?
What would you say? I have one in mind, but I'll let you go first, Chris.
One that springs to mind is, well, you know, obviously any of the books that DC has canceled. Blue Beetle, the Firestorm title that Dwayne McDuffie was working on before it got canceled was very good. I would probably go with Age of the Century. Because it's weird, because, you know, that book used the Century in a way that no one had kind of ever expected anybody to use the Century to, or use the Century in, and so a lot of people were just turned off by the fact that it was a Century title and an all-ages title, when it was, you know, one of the most innovative, fun, clever books that also had really good takeaways.
I like Age of the Century a lot, too.
By Matt Fraction was a good one. I don't know if it was underappreciated, but, you know, I wish more people had read Fell so that it hadn't taken, like, you know, apparently number 10 is supposed to come out, but it's been like 3 years since number 9. I don't know, there's a lot of really good underappreciated stuff out there.
Absolutely. I actually liked Age of the Century a lot, too, and was reading that as it came out. I don't even know if this is necessarily underrated, but I think it is underread. I don't think enough people have read Michael Kupperman's Tales Designed to Thrizzle.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
I mean, everybody I know who has read it loves it. But as far as humor comics go, you cannot find something funnier than Tales Designed to Thrizzle. And another one that I was going to mention is another humor comic. Somehow we got into a conversation a while back about AIT Planet Lar and some of the books they put out, and like how they put out a lot of good stuff. One of the books that they put out that I loved was called Scurvy Dogs, and it was a humor pirate comic that I think only lasted 4 or 5 issues. It's all collected in one trade paperback, the entire series. It's hilarious. I love that series, and as far as I know, I'm one of very few people who actually read it. So,
yeah, Sword from Marvel by Kieran Gillen. Actually, all of Kieran Gillen's, like that Dark Avengers Ares series he did was incredible. Believe it or not, The Darkness by Phil Hester. We've had him on the show before. That book is really good and also kind of a victim of its own stigma. There's a lot of really good comics out there that are unfortunately underrated.
Yeah.
Will Pfeiffer on Catwoman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You hear a lot of good things about Ed Brubaker's run on Catwoman, but it doesn't seem all that well remembered. I don't hear people talking about it.
And it's weird, too, because, you know, I wrote that thing on Noir Comics this week, and that's, you know, another really good one, but I had already talked about Ed Brubaker like four times.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that Will Pfeiffer run with, first of all, Will Pfeiffer's scripts were great. Second of all, it had David Lopez and Alvaro Lopez on art, who were incredible on that book, and are continuing to be incredible with everything they do. They would be awesome on like any kind of like Spider-Man title or Power Man and Iron Fist. Oh man, that would be great. All right, moving on. Next question says, if you had to fight one comic book character evenly matched, which would it be, and how badly would you beat him or her?
My answer is Gambit.
Good call.
And really badly.
Terry Long. Hospitalized.
Yeah. Easy. Done.
You know, as much as I hate Lucy Lane, like I have a legitimate hatred for Lucy Lane, I would not go that far.
There are a lot of places I thought you might go with that answer. I thought you might go to Wonder Man. I thought you might go to Red Tornado. But Terry Long is a good choice.
Let's see here. Magic Love Hose once again would like me to tell the audience about my D&D character. And he says he apologizes in advance to all Warrock at Ajax listeners for the next 10 to 60 minutes. But that's, you know, it's easy. The game I'm playing now, I'm playing Robin Hood. The end. That's it. He's Robin Hood. He has a bow. I thought about seeing if I could find rules to make him an anthropomorphic fox, but I just settled on human anyway. Oh, someone else suggests Captain Britain and MI-13 for a canceled too soon series, which would definitely be true.
Absolutely.
Here's an interesting one. Heron Deer would like to know, he says, a lot of people preach only buy comics you like. Do you think that's a realistic goal, or does the current sales model require the fan who makes irrational purchasing decisions to sustain itself? Yes, I do think only buy the comics you like is a realistic goal. It's what I do. And B, yes, I also think that the current sales model is sort of geared into making you buy a lot of stuff that you otherwise wouldn't read, which can be good. There can be a lot of really good tie-in stuff. If you know you really like Fear Itself or God forbid Flashpoint, then you know maybe you'll pick up Booster Gold and really enjoy it. And I think that's kind of the goal. But I also think it's really easy to just buy stuff you like. Now, I don't think you should ever not take a chance on something if it looks good or if it looks like something you'll like or if you like a creator. Especially if they have creator-owned stuff or independent stuff. But I think it's very easy to only buy comics you like. It's just something not a lot of people do in comics.
Yeah, and it's...
I do like Terror, Witch of the Black Rose. I just don't think it's good.
Well, I don't think anybody buys comics they don't want to like. And where people get hung up is on buying comics that have the characters they love.
Yeah.
But the comics themselves aren't good. And they're not willing to give up on those characters.
Yeah. You've read some bad Spider-Man stories. I've read my share of bad Batman comics.
Yeah, I mean, I've read my share of bad Fantastic Four comics, bad Captain America comics, yep. Because, you know, we love those characters.
I also think that a lot of people get a certain kind of enjoyment out of knowing what's going on in the DC or Marvel universes. You know, the people, sure. The people who are buying to keep up, you know, they do. And I've been in this situation. Like when I worked at the store, I read everything because it was 10 feet away from me, and I could just pick it up when I was bored. You know, there is a certain enjoyment to be had for knowing what's going on in the entirety of the DC or Marvel universe, because those universes are fun places.
Sure,
and it's kind of fun to know all that stuff.
However, we live in a world now where you can keep up. And if the comics aren't good, you don't have to buy them and read them all the way through. You can go online and read a summary and catch up.
Yeah, like, or and there's, you know, how many Marvel and DC books a week get previews released to Comics Alliance or Comic Book Resources or Newsarama? Like, you know, if you want to, you know, check out, like, oh, you know, I've heard good things about Detective Comics. Well, here's 5 pages from it. Do these look good?
Yeah.
If you think
like,
so, buy it.
Well, say, for instance, that, like, you don't want to read Flashpoint, but because...
Okay, I'm with you.
Okay, but you hear that a Flashpoint tie-in is really good, and you want to read that tie-in. Now, ideally, that tie-in is going to stand on its own, and you don't need to read Flashpoint. But if you feel like you have to know what's going on in Flashpoint, Wikipedia exists, and... Yeah. The summaries on Wikipedia tell you every major plot point.
Because they are written by obsessives.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, the thing, like, if you just want to, you know, read every comic in the Marvel Universe and know what's going on, that's, you know, you're an adult, theoretically. That's your choice. But, you know, also, you kind of forfeit your right to complain about, you know, why are they doing this book? Why is this book coming out? You know, like, God, I hate this book. Why don't they change the creative team? Well, because you're buying it. Because the only thing they see is that this book made X amount of money, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, do you know why they do event comics? Because you won't stop buying them.
Right.
And you know, I bought all of Final Crisis. I like Final Crisis. I did, you know, to my eternal shame, I bought all of Infinite Crisis, too. I have no excuse, and I apologize for my part in that. Tim City would like to know which comic arc or original graphic novel would make the best rock opera, and vice versa. I think Spider-Man: Rock Reflections of a Superhero would make a pretty good comic.
Yeah, I mean, that's an easy one. as far as comics becoming a rock opera.
You know what would be great? Infinity Gauntlet on roller skates.
That sounds pretty terrific, I have to say. You know what would make a great rock opera? Not even joking. Like, I don't even love it as, like, necessarily a comic story, but it is perfectly designed to be a rock opera.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Maximum Carnage?
That's good, but it's not it. It is a story from the 90s, though.
What you got?
Nightfall.
Actually, yeah. That would totally make an awesome rock opera.
Yeah. I mean, I could picture it right now. Nightfall would be my answer.
Get Jim Steinman on the phone. We'll have this shit knocked out by Monday. Let's see. Next question comes from Sean Hollenhorse, who would like to know, he was wondering how far you've traveled to get a certain comic you were hunting for.
This was not a trip I specifically made to get the comic, but I searched a whole bunch of comic shops trying to find these comics, and had to travel from my parents' home in Shelby to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, to buy the first, I think I bought the first three or four issues of Welcome Back, Frank at a comic shop in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
That was a good decision.
After not being able to find them anywhere, like, in my direct area around the year 2000.
I haven't really, you know, driven all over looking for a comic, but I have gone to Charlotte for Heroes Con. I've crossed state lines with the explicit purpose of buying Wild Dog Special number one, and then not bought it because there was no way I was going to pay $2 for that book. like, and the guy would not be talked down. And look, Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, you got a copy of Wild Dog Special sitting in your $2 box. Sell it for a buck if a guy is interested in it. Because the principle of the thing, I wanted this comic for a year, and we did not have it at the store where I worked. So I was, you know, looking at quarter bins. And there's no way that I'm gonna pay $2 for that book. But I ended up getting two copies in the mail from friends who had heard that I was unsuccessful in my search. I also went to Charlotte for a con and ended up looking around for issues of Fat Man the Human Flying Saucer from the 60s and found one, the last one I needed there. So, you know, I was traveling for other reasons, but I did go, you know, like, specifically wanting to look for those comics and see if they were there. So I guess from here to Charlotte, which is a couple hundred miles.
There you go.
I think that's about all we've got time for. Sorry for anybody whose question I did not get to.
Yes, thanks for everyone's for sending in their questions. If you would like to send us a listener question by email, please do that at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to leave us a comment and tell us which of us does the better Transformers noise, you can do that. Womp, womp, womp. You can do that at warrocketajax.com, our website. And I think that about takes care of War Rocket Ajax number 70.
And if you're gonna be in Charlotte on a Saturday, you could come to the panel. And if anybody has a question for us there, they can ask it in person, and yeah, we will do our best to answer it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Chris, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me at the-isb.com. That is my homepage, where I have links to things. I also have a Tumblr, 20% cooler, all spelled out, in letters, not numbers, 20%cooler.tumblr.com. And that's where I post pictures that I like, links to everything I do. And I also, I'm one of those guys that gets really distracted by Wikipedia at all times. So as I'm reading different articles, I will occasionally find just a magical sentence, and I will post it as your amazing Wikipedia sentence of the day, over on Tumblr. You can also find my webcomic at awesomehospital.com. I write that with Chad Bowers and is drawn by Matt Diggs, lettered by Josh Kroc, and it is, great. It's great. You should read it if you haven't already. And of course, you can find me every day in my, day job, which is the senior writer of comicsalliance.com, talking about various things like Funky Winkerbean again this week, everybody. Hope you're ready for it. And of course, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/THEISB. Matt, where can everybody find you?
Right now, the best place to find me is on Twitter at highmindedmw. I will let you know there if I ever update any of my websites.
Many websites.
Yes, I am busy with other things at the moment that I'm sure I can announce on the show relatively soon. So,
got a lot of announcements coming down the road.
I do. So go ahead and follow on Twitter. The one thing I do update every day is my Fake E Etiquette Twitter feed. That's on Twitter at Fake E Etiquette with 3 E's all in a row. I would also ask that you follow the rapper who did the theme song for our show and also the former co-host of this show, Adam Warrock, a.k.a. Eugene Ahn. He's on Twitter at Huge Warrock. Also, our former poster artist, Max Huffman. He's on Twitter at Max Huffman. And another member of the Ajax crew, Rusty Shackles. He's on Twitter at Rusty_Shackles.
That's right, everybody. This has been Warwick at Ajax number 70. Join us in 2 weeks when we come back for some big changes and a familiar face. We'll be back for that episode, and I leave you with that. And this one goes out to the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Ooh, yeah.